but a third stage man will feel that. And if he should happen to make brief eye contact with you, he would feel in your eyes your heart's yearning for to be met fully by divine masculine consciousness and the fullness of your gifts you have to offer to that one. And he would not and could not refuse such a moment, because that's what this moment is. It's consciousness and light as one. It's the unity of consciousness and light. This is conscious light. And so these bodies come together playing that conscious light. And you happen to have a more feminine essence. So your offering as a gift is to play the light side of the offering of love. And to the extent you actually offer that, you will attract somebody who's offering that depth of consciousness, that depth of immovable presence that will settle for nothing less than the fullest revelation, opening of your heart through your body, through every cell. If you notice this one cell, just this little cell right here in your body, holding back, it gives it a little... and it opens. And then, of course, because you're the feminine, you want to make sure he's trustable. And so you have no choice but to sabotage the relationship for a moment and see if he's still with you when you criticize him, when you touch upon his weakest point, when you remind him of something he's forgotten about, when you remind him of something he said he'd do that he didn't do. And so you bring those things up, because what would it be to be with a man who, when you brought those things up, took them into account, acted on them, but never collapsed from that depth of presence? That would be real bliss. Most men, you could collapse with the left side of your little pinky. Most men, you could collapse just with a look. And so again, what I would say for the men here to grow into the third stage, it's to learn that the feminine, which is all of this, which is life itself, and all human women too, but life itself, is a constant, from their point of view, test. Can you remain, this is from the masculine side, can you remain fully present in the face of this? Most men? Mm-mm. Not only can't they don't even want to. So they turn to the TV, to the internet, to beer, whatever their chosen ways of reducing lots to little, and then focus on the little bit they could kind of semi-control. And so a third stage man would also sometimes enjoy watching TV, and yeah, because these are inclusive, so you know he would enjoy reducing things at times, because that's a masculine bliss. The reduction to nothing is a masculine bliss. But he wouldn't be afraid of what a first or second stage man would call feminine chaos. You know? First or second stage man comes to a third stage man, and the first or second stage man goes, I can't believe her. First she says one thing, then she says another thing. And then finally, we've talked about this for 3 months, and we're about to buy the house. She tells me that she's been having sex with my brother, and now, yesterday, she told me she wasn't really. And I don't know what to think anymore. You know, and a third stage man goes, yeah. That's the way she dances, you know? And the second stage man goes, but that's not honest, and she should at least tell me what she's going to do. And a first stage man just goes, I'll beat the hell out of her or something. But to a third stage man, that's just the way the feminine is, and he makes no attempt to reduce that chaos. Now, he still has his masculine tendencies and his masculine gifts. So in the midst of whatever you're doing, he may still be guiding, navigating the ship on the stormy waters. You'd enjoy that. Someone who could really navigate in the midst of the storm, that would be beautiful. So he might still be navigating, but he'd be navigating with a sense of humor. He's not going like, hey, if I navigate this, it'll never storm again. Only first and second stage men believe that. You know, well, if we really talk this out, we'll get to the bottom of it, and this issue won't come up again. So very few. And you would need to practice considerably to attract those very few. Did you want to?
A few moments ago, you mentioned some exercises or some physical ways that would enhance the openings. And I would like to know how I could stabilize that third stage. I touch it, I'm there, and then...
Yeah. So that's a good question. How do you stabilize the third stage? Now, everyone has the experience you're describing. They touch it, they lose it, they touch it. And to stabilize there requires that you undo the habits that close you from allowing yourself to be the natural offering of love that you are if you didn't have those habits of closure. For women, one of the most effective ways to do that is through sacred dance as a discipline, not as something they do for fun sometimes, but like an hour a day, every day for 30 or 40 years of moving their, I'm serious, of moving their body through positions that people over centuries have discovered opens your body to shine the divine that flows from your heart. Now, so for right now, for instance, if you want me to stop, just tell me. But you're holding your breath a little. You're not breathing totally full. Your neck's crooked like this as you're talking to me. There's some tension in your pelvis. Your arms are a little held against your body, right? So all of these things are patterns you have in your body. Now, you've probably had those patterns. Now, we all have those patterns. I'm just picking yours at the moment. So we all have our patterns. Those patterns have probably been there since you've been a child. So they've been there for whatever, how many years, you know, decades. You just don't just boop and then they're instantly gone because your nervous system has been rehearsing those patterns of closure now for decades. And so what practice is, and I said this from the beginning today, is first you recognize that everything is okay exactly how it is. You're still love in this form. You know, you're still love even though your arms are clamped down and you're not breathing fully and you're as God gets, you're as divine gets, you're as love gets. And we'd all be a little more open if you could open, you know, and so they're both true. So the first thing is to have the humor, which you have, the openness, that even without any practice at all, this is love. We can love each other completely clamped down, right? Like here I am clamped down, you're still got a little residual clamped down, and we could like, you know, we could have orgasm after orgasm if we chose to clamp down. I think we could have more artful ways of being, you know, if we opened up a little. Now, to open up consistently, then, requires practicing the specific practices for you, each individual, that would undo the tendencies that each of us carry, usually from our childhood, to suppress, hold back, hide, in a feminine person's case, their body's openness as divine love. You could do that through yoga, through body work, through Tai Chi, through dance, through breathing, through chanting, through all kinds of means. I mean, any religion probably has a set of exercises you could do, and there's all kinds of things that are around. Now, in the workshop that I do during the weekend, we do a weekend's worth of exercises. In a 9-day intensive, we do 9 days worth of exercises. We teach 1 month workshops, intensives, where just the same people stay for the month, and then another month, and another month. And then you practice these things, however, whether you take a weekend or a month or just tonight, like that's what I'm trying to give you tonight.
Yeah, yeah.
For the rest of your life now, find ways to do that. So for you in particular, find a way that allows you to feel as if you are breathing the divine. So I'll give you some specific practices. See, any of these you could remember for tomorrow, great. If you forget them all, that's okay too, but see which of these you could remember. So here you are sitting with me, right? Can you feel your own heart? Like the area that it's in? Yes?
Yes.
Okay. Now feel that you're offering me your heart. Like you were going, you don't have to move your body, but the feeling is as if you're offering me your heart. To touch, to see the fullness of love in your heart, to feel how full your heart is of love, to feel the light that's in your heart. Can you feel what that would be to offer me that?
Uh-huh.
Okay, now, specifically feel like you're shining that light through your breasts, like your breasts were headlights on cars, you know, shining your love light to me. See, you just adjusted your body.
Well, I have to, yeah.
Exactly. So what you just noticed, so you begin to see now that what practice means is you start with even very simple things and suddenly you realize how they're all interconnected. Uh-huh. So I just said to shine your love through your breasts and notice that that created a change in your body that said offering me your heart did not change your body. So even though they're both equally true, the more specific we could become, the more we actually start unknotting the closures. So feeling that light shining through your breast, although it sounds kind of silly in its own way, immediately you adjusted your whole posture, you sat up straighter, your legs became more full, there's more energy in your feet than there used to be, your face is more relaxed, your neck is more relaxed, your fingers opened, they're not clamped together anymore. So your whole body opened up around that. So far, so good. Can you still shine that light to me through your breasts? Now, practice that the rest of your life. Practice one. Practice two. Can you feel the divine desire for love on the insides of your thighs?
Well, that's pretty advanced.
Not that advanced. You could feel...
That's why I'm here.
Imagine that God in human form were just touching the insides of your thighs, worshiping you as God. Another body of God to worship. But he happened to be worshiping the insides of your thighs. So feel that worship of the insides of your thighs while you shine to me the light from your heart through your breasts. And now open your eyes. So see, when we close our eyes, we tend to go inward.
Yeah, yeah,
and I understand this is kind of embarrassing
things
to do. And so we go into first stage closure.
Yeah, yeah.
But try to, you know, we're all, you know, if I'll imagine that I have breasts now. I have my little form of them, but you know, I can imagine just feeling the weight of lusciousness hanging from my chest and shining my love through them, and then I could feel what it would be like to receive God between my legs, take him in really deep, offer myself to him in my whole body. You could feel that too, can't you?
I can want that.
You could feel it.
Ooh, it's...
With practice.
Okay.
That's a practice. So practice one, shine through the breast. Practice two, feel receiving the divine masculine consciousness in your inner thoughts. Now, those are two practices. One you could do more easily. First one, right? The second one, it's like, well, I could feel what that would be, but can't quite do it. And then now you know your practice to be practicing now and your next practice to move into. Now, I could give you a million of those practices. They're unnecessary because as soon as you loosen a few of the tightest knots, the rest, since they're all connected, the rest tend to just loosen humorously. And even if some come back on occasion, there's enough humor and looseness left that they open up. So start with that one practice. And when that becomes easy, legs. Okay?
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Do you have a question, or were you just coming back to your seat?
I have a couple. I've enjoyed a bunch of your tapes, so I've considered some of this a little bit. And just what you were speaking about, practices and growth, is one dimension of how we open.
Right.
There's another dimension that has to do with the undoing, the disintegration and reintegration, where no will or intention or practice can take us the next step.
Absolutely.
And all of our focus and polarization and inspiration based on what has already been initiated has to be released. We have to be reduced. We have to let go. We have to know nothing. We have to lose our realization.
Yeah, I wouldn't use the word have to. I would say that happens.
It seems like a necessary process in almost everyone at different moments of their process.
Exactly. I agree. I would say what I call true practice is the simultaneous occurrence of what you just described, which is what I was trying to indicate by saying realizing that this as it is what it is and there's no effort involved, simultaneous with practices like I've just described. So there's no need for the practice whatsoever. There's no gain in the practice. There's nothing to look forward to in the practice. Everything you've learned is useless. It's just total, empty, open, unknown free fall, simultaneous with 100% on the button practice. Both. Now, I think through life there tends to be phases where people like, especially people who emphasize the practice, find themselves suddenly, as you're describing very well, where it's all just, you're stripped of it, left totally naked, and it's that nakedness itself that is the love that you are. But then even as that nakedness, you can practice those practices with no hope of future gain. I mean, you're already open as love. But there is also simultaneous with this present moment, effortlessly and mysteriously love, a kind of evolutionary impulse, or a love has a direction that, again, is objective. People can feel when a person or a community or something is becoming more open or less open. And so both of what those sides to me, actually, to me, this is a critical time in local history, because there's a whole bunch of people going around teaching one side, and there's a whole bunch of people going around teaching the other side. And in my experience, which sounds like your experience, is that both sides are equally true. And so there must be absolutely no effort, because where does effort get you anywhere but more effort? Effort's useless. And yet, effort arises. And when it arises from that place of effortlessness, it has a very different quality to it than when it arises when you actually think you're going somewhere, there's anywhere to go anyways. And so I think there are phases in people's lives where they emphasize one or the other, not by choice, usually by catastrophic falling awayness. It could happen through, transmission, obviously. It could happen through momentary experiences on meditation or drugs. But what I've discovered, and maybe this isn't what you've discovered, but what I've discovered is that having felt both, or been both, however you want to say it, it's the simultaneous practice of both. Now, practicing that one that you're describing, using the word practice for that's not the right word, but allowing that to be, allowing the free fall to be as it is with no effort, while applying total intention towards creating art in whatever domain happens to be arising, which includes the dream world and this waking state and other places one might find oneself. And so to create the art of love in all of those, knowing that without doing anything, it's already love, no effort necessary, total relaxation is effortlessness, commitment to the art, knowing it can go nowhere simultaneously is just what it seems to be. Is this...
I like what you say, and of course, we're helpless but to do these things simultaneously. There must be a kind of surrender to a greater dharma than intention can capture, and one has to show up for life, which means effort and intention.
Yes.
On the other hand, it's not a static quality, and at different moments in life, there's mostly a let-go going on, or there's mostly a real process of entering into a new level of responsibility and a sense of focus and a comp. I'm actually, my practice seems like it's working for that period of time.
So what's your, I agree with you.
I just needed to speak to that because you were talking about these intentional practices with the third stage. For me, this issue about the transition to the third stage, this is really my second question. One of the things that's most crucial, it seems to me, since everyone really is a mixture of first, second, and third stage moments. In my experience, I've met even, perhaps one person who's been consistent in the third stage.
Right.
So my feeling for this is the art, in part, has to do with some second stage skills, because
Definitely.
It's at the second stage that we negotiate the agreements and we establish the levels of mutual trust
Exactly.
that give us the space to be wild enough to have first stage moments and still be showing up in a, you're starting to break all these boundaries and you're stepping into the other person's space, and then you're in a first stage moment, irresponsible. You'd better have some second stage skill or
yes.
you're screwed.
Exactly. I agree. Now, I feel there's a whole lot of people doing great work on establishing, second stage boundaries and communication skill. And so personally, I don't spend a lot of time addressing them, although I totally agree with you. It's like someone could come to a workshop on golfing and then someone starts teaching about baking bread. If you want to learn how to develop trust with another human being at the level of communication, following through on what you're saying you're going to do, and knowing when no really means no and all of that, this is not the work for that. You should go to someone who teaches how to do that. And this is for exactly what you said. Once you've developed second stage skills, and then that's ongoing then for the rest of your life.
Yeah, I the seeming implication that that's a lower practice was there in me in wanting to speak to this too, because I see it as an ongoing practice.
It's an ongoing
practice. No matter what.
But it's a temporarily prior practice to even beginning the third stage, as you say. So that's why lower only in the sense that you need to learn how to read the alphabet before you can read Shakespeare, but you have to read the alphabet to read Shakespeare.
Yeah, great. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you. It's a great question. I mean, to me, that question to me, if I may, is the essence of this moment in history, that people really realize they don't have to do anything, and this is the divine. And they have an impulse to do something, and that's the divine too. And there's an artful way to live that, and there's a less artful way to live that. And with a group of people especially, you get a reflection on which is less and which is more artful, even though both are, as they are, effortless manifestations of divinity. And to really live that paradox fully and to live it with other people and to live it in your own life and in your relationship, as you say, it involves first, second, third stage ongoing practice. But the crux is exactly, I think, what you brought up first. Not getting too much caught in the intentional da-da-da-da-da, and then forgetting that without doing anything, this is it.
This is God as it gets
now. And even in that moment, my heart's beating, we're talking love to love, something's happening, and there's a way to play that something happening that's more or less artful. And for those people who want to, there are ways of developing that art that's heart, that's love, you know. And you can do that without forgetting that this is as God as God gets. So it never gets that grinding self-denial quality of I'm not there yet and I have to do these practices. The practices themselves are filled with humor and openness already, but without stepping away from them either and saying I no longer need to do these, say, first and second stage and other practices. And that usually results in corruption to various degrees. So I think it's a very important point. And in my heart, it's a very alive point because I work with a lot of people now, as it turns out. And so many people fall to one side or the other instead of really being able to feel the value and live the value, especially in relationship, not only intimate relationship, but all relationship, of I love you, you love me, there is no you and me, there is only love. And you and I could love each other in more or less artful ways, and let's find out those ways. Let's play those ways till we die. And when we die, it all disappears anyways, and it won't mean shit. But in the meantime, let's play those ways in the deepest beauty and articulation of, you know. So thank you. Great question. Sir.
So I think you started in with him on what are essentially male practices. So I'm on the phone with her or okay. I'm talking with her.
Yeah.
And she has a manner of expression which goes right to the weakest place.
Yes. That's what she
All does. The garbage comes up. The words back up in the throat.
In you, you're talking about the garbage?
Yeah, okay. For instance.
Sure. There's a lot of those instances here.
And maybe this is a person who matters a lot more than other people matter. So the stakes are much higher. And I think I'm getting through other things that the job is not to get rid of discomfort, but to be able to tolerate more of it and stay present. Is that?
I would agree with you, and I would go beyond that, but I would agree with you. But I would say, let's make art out of the least pleasant things that happen. Now everyone has, like with the woman who was up here before, I said feel this from her breast and feel that from her legs, and the breast part was easy, but her legs, there was a little, so there's an artful way to feel what each of us in any moment is really ready to create art as. And that fluctuates moment by moment in each of us. But I would say, between you and I, let's say, or between you and your men friends or so forth, what are you most terrified of doing? And do that as lovingly and artfully and as an offering to others as you can. And you will discover that your deepest gifts are hidden under what you fear the most. If you could, if I just asked you, like, what are you most terrified of? You don't have to tell me right now, but...
Well, I can make something up.
Pardon me? So you're most terrified of telling the truth?
That's a good start. Yeah.
So I would say that something about telling the truth, that you have a gift. You have a gift of feeling something true that you're not saying. And it's not like I'm an oracle or something, but what happens is we get a kind of backed up energy under our fears, and that becomes, if you look at art, actual artists' lives, like professional artists' lives, painters, musicians, poets, often their greatest art comes from a place of tremendous suffering, but it's offered as a gift to others, and so it opens our heart as love. There's a key in that. That if you are able to take what causes you the most suffering, or your greatest fear is another way of saying that, and if you are willing to embody the action that is your greatest fear, you will discover, and I'm just suggesting this, maybe I'm wrong, find out though, that something will start coming through you that people will go, wow. Probably even right now, just from the little bit we've talked about, there's a deeper, you feel deeper to me. The room feels, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
So all I had to do was say, what are you afraid of? You said, you know, I'm not telling you. I said, okay, so telling me the truth is what you're afraid of. And then you said, okay, that's a good place to start. That was truth. And suddenly the room just went, bong. And because this is all one body, or the body of God, your part of it, of being willing to be in the place you most are afraid to be, which once you're there, you're not afraid anymore, but it'll come back in a second. Everyone feels, because we're one body. So we get to breathe the depth of truth that you are now willing to live in this moment, just from being that truthful. We all, raise your hand if you feel a deepening in this room from him. Look around the room. I want, please look around so you could actually see. Now, unless I've hired all of them as liars, and I have hired a few, right. But unless I hired all of them as liars, we're, and that's what I meant by objective, we're actually all connected in different dimensions in ways that we're one body of God opening. That's the evolutionary impulse words. That there are artful ways of opening, and we just did one. And the result of it was everyone can feel it and be it more open. Now we could do that deeper and deeper and deeper. And as the man before you was pointing out, you don't have to do it deeper. This is already perfect. This is just let go completely as this is right now. I mean, if you're going to die anyways. I mean, think anything you're going to lose at death, the hell are you bothering with it anyways? So that's one side of it. The other side is here we are. And we could live this with more or less art. And you've just contributed to the depth of our art. So far, so good.
Well, the woman who is the example of this in my life happens to be in Boston. We're not really in a relationship, but doing it as if we were with all the intensity.
Mm-hmm.
And the honesty is exactly what she's asking of me. And it feels as if the risk is if I'm honest, the relationship goes poof when... In fact, it's probably just the reverse.
Well, no, not necessarily. Let's get into the art of honesty. Because there's first, second, and third stage honesty. And again, I'm just using these stages. You know, I use them very loosely. And in first stage honesty, what's honest is your reality. In a second stage, what's honest is making sure somebody else understands your reality. Mm-hmm. In the third stage, you realize that all there is love. And so what the deepest truth is what creates the deepest love. And that's why third stage people say the weirdest things. I mean, they might lie to you outright in a second stage way, but if it serves to create deeper art, I mean, think of an artist. Think of the greatest artist in the world painting these flowers. You could be an ultra-realist, which would be being honest, like getting these flowers perfectly as they are. You might as well just photograph them, though. But perhaps if you distorted them a bit, you would actually display the essence of the flowers deeper than if you did it realistically. You know what I'm saying? Well, why stop there? Why stop with painting? How about our verbal use? And again, I'm talking about the third stage. So, and I acknowledge that the second stage has to be there. So the ability to be verbally honest in a second stage way must be first developed. But once you do that, why stick to photorealism? You have impressionism, you have abstract art. You know, I could speak to you in ways that make no, that might be total lies, and yet are so exquisite in their just, I mean, what is Bach and Beethoven, is one telling the truth and one lie? I mean, what does lie and truth mean, or honesty mean, when all you want to do is offer the deepest love that already is more deep? So what does she want you to be honest about specifically? And I'll do my best to help you cultivate the art.
Then we'll take a break. She asked me not to call her, so I'm not sure right now. This is her consistent complaint has been, Hap, you're just doing a big drama. And I kind of get that, and I see it's a drama, and I tend to show up, get plugged in, and do the drama. And the same day, I realize this is just a drama. I could be doing a better job of painting the flowers the way you're suggesting, more what I think it would be a third stage kind of thing.
Well, from a third stage point of view, she loves the drama, or she wouldn't be doing it. And can you have humor in the midst of that drama? So in those conversations, when she touches your weakest thing and she's doing this thing and this drama happens, are you able to smile and feel your death and know that all of this will be washed and it'll be as if it had never happened, and you're resting in that place that already is, and it is when nothing happens and this drama's going on, but you're rested in that place already, and now you can do art with the drama. It's when you feel that there's a possibility of loss you're describing. I'm afraid of losing this relationship. So that is, in my jargon, a first stage moment when you have something you don't want to lose. And so what happens is your childhood ways of coping with lack of love that you develop with your parents comes up, and you replicate them with her, and she's replicating them with you. And that's a first stage drama. Second stage drama, you learn to talk about it and come and you go, you know, these are my childhood things coming up now. And she goes, yes, I know. And these are my childhood things coming up. Yes, I know. And blah, 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 blah. And in the third stage, you both already know all of that. I mean, it might take years to develop that, but you both know that. And now she's going, well, you always, na, 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 and you always, na, 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 and you're, na, 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 you know, and you say, you are making me hard. And you're saying it because it's art. Not because it's a lie or because you're trying to change her or you wish things were different. If you could think of something better to say in the moment, say it. You know? But I can tell you that would be more artful than going, well, you know, the way I really feel about it is. I mean, that's just going to be more, right? Yeah. As you're speaking to me, I could feel the little hairs on the inside of your arm kind of curling up, singing to me. They're singing to me in the voice of marigolds and daisies. I love you. You're trying to trick me. What are you doing here? You know, fuck you and never want to hear from you. Goodbye. What would you do at that point? I mean, it's all going to be washed. There'll be a point when you die, you'll never even know she existed. It'll all be gone. So it's your art. You want to pick up the phone, call her up and make art that way? Not call her up, make art that way? You find your deepest offering of love in that moment, and that will be your deepest offering of love. And then when you lay down and you go to sleep at night and you let go, all of this disappears, and it disappears without a moment of regret or guilt or feeling you could have done something different, because you've always acted from that spontaneous place of effortless art, developing the skill as you go, because the skill does deepen as you go. But it's always from that effortless place of, as if you are already dead, is one way of putting it. You're already dead. She's gone, your body's gone, relationship's over. Nothing, nothing's here. One needs to be able to feel the place that right now you are that now. And that takes practice too, in a sense. It takes remembering that place. It takes being and relaxing as that place, letting go of everything. And now from that place where you need nothing because you are nothing, you're dead, as if dead. One way to begin to feel that place is the place where you're deep asleep. You know, when you go to sleep, everything disappears. Well, if you feel right now, you can actually feel the place that is in that silent hum of deep sleep right now. And now on top of that is all of this happening. But it doesn't take a whole lot of time, a couple minutes, maybe a couple days, to be able to feel the place of that kind of silent bliss of deep sleep, just where nothing is happening. And to rest there, and to practice resting there. Now, that's not as deep as where death is, and that's not as deep as where all of this actually is. But when you can relax open as all of that, her drama, it's still a drama, and your body still has all of its first and second stage responses to the drama. So you'll find yourself choking up and coming up, staying, saying these stupid things, getting angry. All these things are happening in your body. And it's basically feels kind of like a dream that you're aware of is a dream, and it's happening, and your body's fucked up, and hers is fucked up, and you're fighting, and I love you, and let's do art. You know? And so I can't tell you exactly what to do unless I was standing right there, and even then I could only help you, and you'd really have to feel what your art is in the moment. But it's based on already feeling as if you've lost her, already feeling as if you've lost everything. Already, because you have, really. None of this was here a second ago. This is a fresh moment arising. You could begin to feel it that way, too. Everyone has their own way of feeling it. You could feel this moment, right? It's coming here. Ooh, it just keeps coming. Ooh, ooh. But it's fresh. It's constantly this fresh, spontaneous moment, right? So what if part of it is, and so that part of the fresh, spontaneous moment is that. You don't know, how do you want to respond to that from that depth of love? No threat. You're happy with her. You're happy without her. You're happy when she's being a bitch. And by happy, I mean rested, as open as that place. You're happy when she's sucking your dick. Now, you might prefer that she suck your dick than be a bitch. And actually, she may prefer that, too. But what's happening in this moment is what's happening in this moment. Coming from that place of depth, doing your art, doing your best to bring her back to the humor of that which is, even as all of this disappears, which is your masculine gift to her, because the feminine tends to get caught in the momentum of things happening, of emotions moving, of relationships shifting. And she'll find herself hanging up that phone and saying, "Don't call me again." And then just waiting for you to call. Ladies, raise your hand if that's true sometimes. Okay. So now, I don't know. She may really not. Maybe you're a creep, you know. I don't know. And she really wishes that you'd leave her alone. But it is also true that a woman who loved you utterly might say that, hang up the phone and say, "Never call me again," just to feel if you love her enough that you're going to call her. Now, I wasn't there again. I can't offer you my feedback. But
I had an acquaintance who ended up in intensive care in the hospital in Oakland here. Mm-hmm. And I started thinking about that, and the whole mortality issue hit. And I hadn't talked with her for 4 months or something. And my hands were sweaty, and I was shaking. And I picked up the phone at bedtime. I know when she gets in bed. And I called her, and I said, "A friend of mine's in the hospital. He might die. I just realized we both might die, and I want you to know I love you." Mm-hmm. And we started talking again.
I'll just keep doing that for the rest of this life, as long as it continues.
Yeah. I mean, I can take pretty much of a beating. And maybe.
Do you want to take a beating?
Well, that's another question.
No, really though, before you die, what would you like to do with this woman? What is your deepest desire with this woman?
At this point, I don't know. We may be phasing out.
You may be, but at this point, you do know at this point. It could change in 10 seconds.
Okay.
But at this point, what is your heart's deepest desire with this woman? If you knew you were going to die tomorrow, would you call her today?
Absolutely.
Okay, so you do know. So you don't know. So you absolutely would call her today if you knew you'd die tomorrow.
I'd call her right now.
That's the answer to your question. That's your art. That's the way to discover your art. What do you need to do before you die so you could die complete? Do it. It's what you fear the most you'll discover. Or you would have called her already. And tell her the truth. And the truth is, hello? I know you said not to call me, but if I'm about to die, I want you to know I love you. And the first thing I do is call you. Maybe you should do that during the break. What do you think? Play it from there. Do you understand?
Yeah.
See, you're just denying that deep part of you that's very readily there. Several times in this conversation, it's just come right to the fore. I said, what does your deepest heart want to do with this woman? You say, I don't know. That's your first stage childhood, fear of losing her, confusion, blah, 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 mind shit. Then I just said, you're going to die tomorrow, which kind of almost instantly wipes off the first and second stages if you really feel it. And then I said, would you call her? You'd say, absolutely. I mean, that was just bam, absolutely. Now, will you call her during the break? We're going to find out. And you will find out whether you are going, in this moment, whether you want to live in the first stage of your self-concern, the second stage of what you both think you want, or the third stage of what you must do as a gift to others, a gift for their sake before you die. What would you offer her on the phone as a gift for her before you die? And you're not offering your deepest because you want to offer your deepest. I want to close with this and then we'll take our break. You offer your deepest for the sake of others. That's the only way you could be sure you're not faking the first stage and thinking it's the third stage. You're doing it for the sake of others. So, what poetry, what words, what emotion would you offer her? When would you offer it to her that would most open her heart? And what would you say that would most open her heart? Which may have nothing to do with what you want to say. What you want to say is your first stage need. You being heard and willing to listen to her is your second stage need. Both of those are necessary at times. What the third stage is about is feeling how you can serve her more deeply as love, because she is the same divinity that you are. And you are here as a temporary sacrifice of love.